sales could not outpace their debt, and Fried's beloved pizza chain was forced to close. The perfect size for your business? It will happen naturally when you take your profit first. You will reverse engineer all the elements of your business. And as Fried says, the right size will find you. As an aside, coach, 200-300 businesses a year. Sometimes a quick phone call for 10 or 15 minutes. Other times an in-depth visit for 2 or 3 days. And this has become a recurring motto for me. I found that the most successful businesses understand this principle, that the right size will find you. You know, we talk about these BHAGs, these big, hairy, audacious goals, and these big numbers you need to set. And it sounds wonderful until you find out they're totally arbitrary. And for many business owners, it's totally inappropriate. We really want to just have a business that supports your purpose in life, your mission, that brings you wealth, that brings you prosperity. It doesn't need to be a random number. It's okay. Actually, it's more than okay. It's appropriate for the right size business to find you. With Profit First, we're going to keep marching forward. We are going to grow your business, likely faster than you ever have before, and definitely more healthy than you ever have before. And you'll find a time, I don't know what the number is, and I suspect you don't know it either. You will find a time when the right size has found you, and it's okay to stay and live there. We're building a business for your prosperity, your happiness, your enjoyment. We want to be fulfilling in all aspects. So let the right size business find you. That's what I'm doing. That's what I'm coaching others to do. And that's what I encourage you to consider too. So why are entrepreneurs programmed to pursue bigger and bigger and bigger? Because of an assumption that at a certain point, all that revenue will yield a profit. You think you will just need one more big project or one more new client or just a little bit more time. And finally, that profit will pour in. But it never does. Profit is always within sight, but never attainable. It's like the donkey with a carrot dangling over its head. The jackass keeps working harder and harder, but never gets to the carrot. It's always just one more step away. The problem is that jackass is you. Now, sorry about that. I'm just being brutally honest here. I hurt you because I love you. Here's the deal, my friend. Profit is not an event. Profit is not something that happens at year end or at the end of a 5-year plan or someday. Profit isn't even something that waits until tomorrow. Profit must happen now and always. Profit must be baked into your business every day, every transaction, every moment. Profit is not an event. Profit is a habit. Do you know the saying, revenue is vanity, profit is sanity, and cash is king? It is a succinct reminder that your job is to maximize profit, regardless of the current size of your business. As you focus on profit, you'll discover new ways to both streamline and grow your business. It doesn't work the other way around. The lemming mentality of growing first with the hope of finding profit in the process is so bass-ackward, it drives me nuts. Recently, I delivered a speech in tiny Georgetown, Colorado, at an event hosted by my dear friend, Michelle Villalobos. As often happens in my Profit First presentations, one of the entrepreneurs said, "This sounds great and all, but I need to grow. I need to put all my money back into my business to do that." Perhaps you're thinking the same thing right now. If you are, it's because you're stuck in the mode of grow now, profit someday. I asked her, "Why do you want to grow?" "I want to grow so that my company can manage more clients and generate more sales," she said. "Why do you want that?" She looked at me as if I were an alien. "So that my company is bigger, Mike?" "Why do you want a bigger company?" I asked. "So I can make more money," she responded. I could tell from her tone that she was getting exasperated. "Aha," I said. "Now that we've peeled back the good old Georgetown, Colorado onion," which, let me be clear, it is not known for its onions, "why not just make more money now?" She wants to grow, so that she can make a profit one day. Alternatively, if you want to grow for ego and to boast, that is just dumb. That's exactly what I did in the past. So embarrassing. If you want to grow to make money for yourself one day, you are playing a game of kick the profit can down the road. Here's the reality if you want healthy, sustainable growth, which not so surprisingly will spawn more healthy growth. You need to reverse engineer the profit. Take profit first. You can't grow out of your profit problem. You need to fix profit first, then grow. You must figure out the things that make profit and dump the things that don't. When you focus on growth, it is inevitably a scramble to grow at all costs. Yes, at all costs, including the quality of your life. When you focus on profit first, you inevitably figure out how to make a profit consistently. Profitability, stability, sanity, forevermore. Check to check and panic to panic. Have you ever had the thought that the universe knows exactly how much extra money you have? A customer pays up on a $4,000 past due invoice you wrote off months ago, and later that week your delivery truck breaks down for good. Bye-bye, $4,000. You land a new client and a wad of cash drops into your lap. Only minutes later, you remember that this is a 3-payroll month. Oh well, at least now you'll almost be able to cover it. Or you get a credit on your credit card account for an accidental billing. Woohoo! Found money. Only to discover another charge on your credit card for something you forgot all about. It's not the universe that knows how much we have in our bank account. It's us. We default to managing the cash of our business by doing what I call bank balance accounting. If you're like most entrepreneurs, and me, this is how it works. You look at your bank balance and see a chunk of change. Yippee! You feel great for about 10 minutes, and then decide to pay all the bills that have been piling up. The balance goes to zero, and very quickly you feel that all-too-familiar tightening in the chest. What do we do when, instead of a decent bank balance, we see that there's next to nothing there? We immediately panic. We hit go mode. Need to sell fast. Need to make collection calls. Need to pretend the bills never arrived, or send out checks and accidentally forget to sign them. When we know our bank balance is super low, I'm talking limbo, how low can you go low? We'll do anything to buy the only thing we can afford, time. I'm going to go out on a limb and guess that you only look at your income statement on occasion. I suspect you rarely look at your cash flow statements or balance sheet. And if you do, I doubt you review these docs on a daily basis or understand exactly what they say. But I bet you check your bank account every day. Don't you? Or maybe once a week, but I bet you do. It's okay. If you look at your bank account daily or weekly, I want to congratulate you because that means you are a typical, scratch that, a normal business leader. That's how most entrepreneurs behave. It is our natural desire as entrepreneurs to find problems and fix them. This is how we manage money. When we have enough money in the bank, we think we don't have money problems, and so we focus on other challenges. When we see that we don't have enough money in the bank, we go on red alert and take immediate action to fix our money problems, usually by trying to collect revenue quickly, or selling a big ticket item, or some combination of the two. We use the money we have to pay the bills we owe. When we don't have enough to cover everything, we try to get more money through sales and collections. Except that to support new revenue, we now have a host of new related expenses. So the cycle starts all over again. If you haven't relied on it from the start, eventually the only solution is to take on debt. A second mortgage on your family home, a line of credit tied to your building, a stack of credit cards 3 inches high. This is how many entrepreneurs end up operating their business check to check and panic to panic. So let me ask you a question. How confident are you that you could grow your business if you operated this way? Do you think you'd ever be able to get off this roller coaster ride? Could you dig yourself out of debt using this system? Of course not. And yet, bank balance accounting is human nature. We humans are not big on change. Change is hard. With our very best intentions, changing your human tendencies to operate your business based on how much cash you see in your account would take years. I don't know. You tell me. Do you have years to make your own transformation before your very own monster destroys everything? I sure as hell didn't. This is why, if we are to free ourselves from living check to check and panic to panic, we must find a method that works with our nature, not against it. Without an effective money management system that does not require massive mindset change, we get stuck in trying to sell our way out of our struggles. Sell more. Sell faster. Get money any way you can. It is a trap, a dangerous trap, that would even have Frankenstein's monster poop in his panties. It's the survival trap. Since you are listening to the audio version, I know you don't have access to the graphics. I do have all of these on my website. So if you are not driving and you have access to the web, go to mikemichalowicz.com. I know my last name is probably the hardest name ever to spell. It is even difficult for me still. So I have a shortcut. You can go to mikemotorbike.com. That was my nickname in high school, Mike Motorbike. So go to mikemotorbike.com. It'll forward you to my site, Mike Michalowicz. And then go to the resources menu option. And in there, you'll see a profit first section. Actually, see sections for all my books. All the graphics, everything you need from the books are available for download there. So let's dig in. And as I go through the reading here, if there's any things that you need to know from the graphic, I'll just point it out, in the book itself. But when you get a chance, download off the site. The survival trap. My long guy, Ernie, is a good example of someone caught in the survival trap. As is true for most long guys in the Northeast, Ernie makes good money removing leaves from lawns. Despite this, Ernie is always in need of more revenue. This past fall, he knocked on my door and said that he had noticed leaves in my gutters and would gladly clean them up. He had a captive client, me, and could now sell me another service. Easy money. When he was on the roof, he noticed my shingles needed repair. He offered roofing services. Why not repair my chimney, too? Sounds like a smart guy, right? Except that he's an idiot. Let me be clear. Ernie is a great person. He truly is. Ernie has great goals and ambitions. It's his decision to expand his offering and expand his offering further that is pure idiocy. Any sale feels like a good sale because sales help to temporarily lift us out of crisis. So now we're going to look at the survival trap graphic. I'll explain it really basically. Again, you can download it, but just some basics so you can kind of visualize what's going on. In the graphic, there is point A and point B. Point A is where we are today. Point B is where we want to go, where we're headed, the vision. Well, the shortest distance between two lines, point A, point B, is a straight line. The problem is, many people are unclear where point B is. They don't have a clear vision. They're not exactly sure where they want to go. So they're at point A, and the shortest distance to get out of there is a straight line in any direction. So imagine in the graphic, if point A is on the left and point B is on the right, you can actually, from point A, go straight up, straight down. You can go to the left. You can go on a diagonal. You can go in any direction to get out of your trap that you're currently in. The thing is, sometimes it moves you further away from where you're headed. So the survival trap just points that we can go in any direction to feel immediate relief, but sometimes it actually makes things even worse. Most of the time, it gets us out of point A, the panic we're in, only to be sucked back in there days or weeks later. So hopefully that gives you a sense for the visual. But here's what I share in the book. Ernie is at point A, which is really called crisis, and he wants to get to point B, which is the vision for our future. The thing is, as is the case for most of us, his vision is very vague. Instead of a clear statement of his products or services and the clients he wants to serve, Ernie might have a goal like, I want a lot more money and need relief from stress. The connection between point A and point B is never defined beyond sell, baby, just sell anybody anything. Looking at the figure, you can see that many of the decisions we make around just selling, in fact, take us further away from our true vision. Now, looking back at the graphic, I'll give you some of the kind of escapes we use to get out of crisis. Offer a new product to make immediate revenue. May not be consistent with a vision. You may not even have a vision, so you just make any product. And now it actually competes with your other products or competes for time and distracts your team and yourself, requires new learning. Another way we get out of crisis is to hire an expert, someone who knows the ins and outs of our industry. And that way we can instantly expand our offering and do more. Of course, that person, we can't afford to pay them. And as they move along in their work serving our company, they start to do what's called the reverse golden handcuff. That employee has all the knowledge and now traps you, saying, as the owner of the business, you got to pay me more and more to keep me. And if you get rid of them, you're out of business because they contain all the knowledge, the reverse golden handcuffs. You know, one of the ways we get out of crisis too is run a last minute promotion. Quick cash. Oh my God, we're panicked. Let's launch. Let's sell something. Just put something in the market. We go in ill-prepared, no consistency, no building of our products and services as in a complementary mean, just sell anything. And again, we're moving away from that vision. And then the most classic one is, I'm just going to do it myself. I don't cost anything to the organization. I'm just going to work harder. And, you know, you max out on time, you can't work anymore, and the business still struggles. All of these ways, and I have many more in the graphic, but all these ways are ways that we get out of crisis only temporarily. And every time, it's just a matter of time before we get pulled back into crisis. When Ernie offers me a new service because it will make fast money, he hasn't considered that it has nothing to do with what he wants his company to become or whom he wants his company to serve. It is very easy to go from being a guy who rakes lawns to a guy who fixes chimneys because of the opportunity for easy money with captive clients. The money may be easy, but what about the cost to do it all? Rakes and blowers for yard work are useless when working on roofs or chimneys. Now this guy needs ladders, roofing gear, bricks, and other materials. And most important, he needs the skills to complete the tasks, which means hiring skilled labor or going back to raking, gutter cleaning, roofing, and chimney school. Each new easy sale took Ernie further from his lawn raking business. The survival trap promises fast money, but when we're caught in it, we, like Ernie, rarely think about the massive cost of opportunity. And most of the time, we can't discern profitable income from debt-generating income. Instead of being the world's best at one thing, mastering the process and delivering perfectly and super efficiently, we end up doing a greater variety of things and becoming less and less efficient at each step while our business becomes harder to manage and more costly to run. The survival trap is not about driving toward our vision. It's all about taking action, any action, to get out of crisis. Any of the actions shown in Figure 1 will get us out of immediate crisis. But by taking the actions like those on the left of the circle, we get out of crisis, sure enough, but we are going in the opposite direction from our vision at point B. Again, I know you can't necessarily see the graphic as I'm reading this to you. What I have in point A, that's the crisis, I have a vertical line going straight down, splitting the circle in half. And it shows that 50% of the time in crisis decision-making, we're actually moving our business further away from our vision. Not just trying to survive, we're actually damaging our progress. The other 50% of the time, we're moving at least somewhat in the direction of our vision, but usually off kilter in a diagonal above or below it. It's just in rare circumstances, happenstance, that we hit our progress towards our vision. We take money from anyone, and I mean anyone, willing to pay us. Money from bad clients, you know what I'm talking about. Money for bad projects, you know what I'm talking about there too. Money from our own pockets, if there's anything left in them besides two dimes, a stick of gum, and a wad of lint. In this way, we stay stuck on the roller coaster ride that is surviving check to check and panic to panic. Other actions shown on the diagram don't take us in the opposite direction, but they are askew. Only when you stay in the channel of the horizontal dotted line do you make your vision for your business a reality. The survival trap is deceptive because it fools us into thinking we are at least inching toward our vision, as if our reactionary behavior is actually smart or evidence of our good instincts, and will eventually lead us to the promised land, financial freedom. Consider the actions on the right side of Figure 1. For instance, a just sell approach will, by pure happenstance, also occasionally move us toward our vision, and we can easily trick ourselves into believing that we are on the right track. Sometimes we make a crisis decision without considering our vision or the path to get there, and we get it right. Happenstance happens. At that point, we say, see, I'm getting there. Things are clicking. Things are coming together. But this is random chance, resulting from crisis, not focus or clarity, and is therefore false. It is like believing that because you once won a scratch-off card, the lottery is a good investment strategy. It is this kind of thinking that quickly lands us back in crisis mode. The survival trap is an ugly beast. It buys you time, but the monster gets bigger and bigger, and at some point it will turn on you and destroy you ruthlessly. Sustained profitability depends on efficiency. You can't become efficient in crisis. In crisis, we justify making money at any cost, right now, even if it means skipping taxes or selling our souls. In crisis, the survival trap becomes our modus operandi, until our survival strategies create a new, more devastating crisis that scares us straight, or, more commonly, scares us right out of business. Part of the problem is bank balance accounting. Looking at the money in your bank account as one pool from which you can operate your business without first addressing tax issues or your own salary, never mind profit. This leads to top-line thinking, focusing on revenue first, last, and always. That thinking is further supported by the traditional accounting method public companies most use and most small businesses elect to use. GAAP stands for Generally Accepted Accounting Principles. Traditional accounting is killing your business. Since the dawn of time, or shortly thereafter, businesses have kept track of their earnings and expenditures using essentially the same method. Sales minus expenses equals profit. If you manage the numbers like most entrepreneurs, you start with sales, the top line, then subtract costs directly related to the delivery of your offering, product or service. Then you subtract all the other costs you incur to run your business, rent, utilities, employee salaries, office supplies and other administrative expenses, sales commissions, taking your client out to lunch, signage, insurance, etc., etc. Then you pay taxes. Then, and only then, do you take your owner's distribution, or owner's salary or profit distribution, whatever you label it. Let's be honest. Entrepreneurs hardly ever take anything close to a real salary. And good luck telling the government that you decided to skip taxes this year so that you could pay yourself. Finally, after all that, you post your company's profit. And if your experience is like the majority of entrepreneurs, you never get to finally. When you're waiting for leftovers, at best you'll get scraps. The traditional accounting methods we use today became formalized in the early 1900s. The particulars are updated regularly, but the core system remains the same. Start with sales, subtract direct costs, the cost you directly incur to create and deliver your product or service, pay employees, subtract indirect costs, pay taxes, pay owners, owner distributions, retain or distribute profit, the bottom line. Whether you outsource your bookkeeping or keep a shoebox of receipts under your bed, the basic idea stays the same. Logically, GAAP makes complete sense. It suggests that we sell as much as we can, spend as little as we can, and pocket the difference. But humans aren't logical. One episode of Bridezilla pretty much proves that. Just because GAAP makes logical sense doesn't mean it makes human sense. GAAP both supersedes our natural behavior and makes us believe bigger is better. So we try to sell more. We try and try and try to sell our way to success. We do everything we can to make the top line, revenue, grow so that something, anything, will drip down to the bottom line. It becomes a relentless cycle of chasing after every shiny object disguised as opportunity. That's little pumpkins to my peeps. You know who you are. Throughout this haphazard, desperate growth process, our expenses are lost in the wash. We just pay as we go. They're all necessary, right? Who knows? We're too busy hunting down sales and trying to deliver on all our promises to worry about the impact of expenses. We try to spend less without considering investments versus costs. We don't think about leveraging our spending to get way more mileage out of way less expense. We can't. The more variety of stuff we sell, the more our cost of doing business rises. They say it takes money to make money. But no one ever tells us what that translates to in the real world. It takes more money to make less money. As our monster gets bigger, its appetite gets out of hand. Now we're faced with covering expenses for more employees, more stuff, more everything. The monster grows and grows and grows. Meanwhile, we're still dealing with the same problems, just bigger ones. More empty bank accounts, higher stacks of credit card bills, bigger loans, an ever-increasing list of must-pay expenses. Sound familiar, Dr. Frankenstein? GAAP's fundamental flaw is that it goes against human nature. No matter how much income we generate, we will always find a way to spend all of it. And we have good reason for all of our spending choices. Everything is justified. Soon enough, whatever money we had in the bank dwindles down to nothing as we struggle to cover every necessary expense. And that's when we find ourselves in the survival trap. A secondary flaw is this. GAAP teaches us to focus on sales and expenses first. Once again, it works against our human nature, which urges us to grow what we focus on. It's something called the primacy effect. More on that in the next chapter. We focus on what comes first, sales and expenses, and actually become blind to what comes last. Yes, GAAP makes us blind to profit. There is a saying, what gets measured gets done. GAAP has us measure sales first. It is the top line, after all, and therefore we sell like mad while expenses are treated like a necessary evil to support, you guessed it, more sales. We spend all that we have because we believe we must. And we use terms like plow back or reinvest to feel good about it. Profit? Your salary? Mere afterthoughts. Leftovers. Talking about being last, I got a little story from, I don't know, it was third grade or second grade, but it was kickball. That I remember because I was a kid picked last. Back then, this is before they did all those things like where everyone's a winner and everyone gets a trophy. This is where they had captains for the team, the best players, and they would then pick from the other students to be on their team. Well, guess what? Yucko was picked last. Me. Because I sucked at kickball. I mean, I really sucked. I was so bad that the gym teacher, Mrs. Lally, would come over to home plate, place the kickball down for me to kick it, instead of pitching it, and I would still strike out. That's how bad I was. So I was picked last. But that's the lesson, that what we don't want, we choose last. It's like forced down our throat. When you, me, was the last kid picked for the team, you're the undesirable. Think about, say you get sick or something, and you have to go to the hospital. Do you come out of the hospital saying, now I'm going to put my health last? Of course not. You say I'm going to put my health first. First means priority. It's hardwired into us. Last means insignificant, ignored, leftovers, unimportant. It's hardwired into us. Profit first works with your behavioral psychology. And this principle of what comes first, the primacy effect, is absolutely critical. Another problem with GAAP is its overwhelming complexity. You need to hire an accountant to get it right. And when you ask your accountant the details about GAAP, he is likely to get confused. The system changes and it's up for interpretation. We can play games with GAAP. Move some numbers around, post some stuff in different spots, and the numbers look different. Just ask Enron. They were able to post profits as they were going bankrupt. Yuck. Before we go any further, I want to make sure you and I are on the same page when I talk about profit, because the way accountants think about profit can be very different. Here's what I mean. A couple of years before I wrote The Toilet Paper Entrepreneur, I was sitting in my accountant's office, watching him scratch down some notes with a pencil on a legal pad. He erased something, then wrote down another note. Then he looked up at his computer, clicked and clacked a few buttons, and the dot matrix printer spit out a report. Yep, just as I thought, Mike. Keith peering over his John Lennon wannabe glasses. What? I said. You had a $15,000 profit this year. Congratulations. That isn't too bad. For a second, I felt pride. Damn straight there's a profit. I patted myself on the back. Then I had a sinking feeling. Where was the cash? There wasn't a penny in the corporate coffers, let alone in my pocket. Then, Feeling embarrassed that I didn't know the answer, I asked, "Hey, Keith, where is the prophet?" He pointed to the paper report that the printer had just spit out. He circled it on the paper with his fancy schmancy number 2 pencil. "Yes, Keith, I can see the prophet on the paper, but where is the cash? I want to take it out and celebrate a little. I want that prophet for me." There was a moment of awkward silence. Keith did his best to avoid making me feel stupid. He stared at me. Then he said, "This is an accounting prophet. You spent the money in some way already. It doesn't mean there's any money actually there right now. In fact, in your case, it's already gone. This is just the accounting of what already happened. So are you saying I have a profit, but there's nothing in the bank for me to take as a profit right now?" "Exactly," said the John Lennon poser. "Damn, this sucks. Maybe next year," Keith said. "Next year? Why next year? Why not starting tomorrow?" I thought. Accountants define profit differently than entrepreneurs. They point to a fictitious number at the bottom of an accounting report. Our definition of profit is simple. Cash in the bank. Cold, hard cash. For us. At the end of the day, the start of a new day, and every second in between, cash is all that counts. It is the lifeblood of your business. Do you have it or not? If you don't, you're in trouble. And if you do, you are sustained. GAAP was never intended to manage only cash. It is a system for understanding all the elements of your business. It has 3 key reports: the income statement, the cash flow statement, and the balance sheet. There is no question that you need to understand these reports, or work with an accountant or bookkeeper who do, because they will give you a holistic view of your company. They are powerful and highly useful tools. But the essence of GAAP, sales minus expenses equals profit, is horribly flawed. It is a formula that builds monsters. It is the Frankenstein formula. To successfully run a profitable business, we need a super simple system to manage our cash. One we can understand within seconds, without help from an accountant. We need a system that is designed for humans, not Spock. We need a system that can instantly tell us the truth about the health of our businesses, one that we can look at and know instantly what we need to do to get healthy and stay healthy. A system that tells us what we can actually spend and what needs to be reserved. A system that doesn't require us to spend but automatically works with our natural behaviors. Profit First is that system. Profit First is built for humans. How many times did Spock stare into Captain Kirk's eyes and say, "That is highly illogical"? Well, just like you, Captain Kirk was a human, and humans are not logical. We are emotional beasts with monkey brains. We like shiny objects. We stuff ourselves when there's free pizza. We buy 12 pounds of cat food just because it's on sale, even though we don't have a cat. Okay, maybe that's just me. But we also know to trust our gut, go with our instincts, take shortcuts, and be inventive on the fly so we can move on and get more things done. If you were Spock, the relentlessly logical Vulcan on Star Trek, in addition to your pointy ears and awkwardly tight uniform, you would follow all the accounting instructions necessary to pinpoint your numbers. On a weekly basis, you would study your income statement, tie it into your balance sheet, and of course, do an analysis of your cash flow. Next, you would run the critical ratios like the OCR, operating cash ratio, and tie all this into your budget and projections. Then you would evaluate the associated KPIs, key performance indicators. You would do it all, and you would know exactly where your profits stand at any time. But you don't, do you? Not even close. I don't. In fact, I still can't read those documents well. That's why I employ a couple of Spocks, my accountant and my bookkeeper. I am a human, and so are you, and I strongly suspect you are a Captain Kirk. And that is a good thing, because you are the perfect person to lead your corporate ship to profits at warp speed. As a human, you likely have certain tendencies. Chances are you log into your bank account every few days, or maybe a few times a day, to see what your bank balance is. You probably make gut decisions based on the balances you see. A lot of deposits and you feel good. Business is cooking. Let's take our clients out for bottomless margaritas. You can see I do like margaritas. Let's buy the foosball table for the office. No money, and panic sets in. Need to start making collection calls. Sell the foosball table. Sell the rad vending machines. Sell all the chairs. Sitting is bad for you anyway. All while praying that someone buys you a bottomless margarita. This and other normal human behaviors put businesses, unintentionally, into a constant state of flux. But I got good news, people. I designed Profit First so that you don't have to change yourself at all. This is a critical point. You've always had an opportunity to change yourself and read your financial statements, sync your accounts payable and accounts receivable, make sure you are within budget, and make sure all the financial ratios are right. If you did all that, you would know where your profit stands all the time. But only Spock and accountants, and actually not many of them, can and do that. Most entrepreneurs revert to checking their bank balance and going with their gut. Why? As Charles Duhigg explains in The Power of Habit, it is human nature to revert to established habits in times of stress. And guess what? The definition of entrepreneurship is constant stress. So we look for shortcuts and quick answers, especially with our finances. The great news is that Profit First is within your natural path. It is directly in alignment with the shortcut of looking at your bank account. It is unavoidable, designed to complement your natural human behaviors. Therefore, it works. Established habits die hard, so why try changing your habits? Instead, use a system that works with your existing habits. Profit First sits in front of your accounting. It will tell you when you have a red flag and need to dig into the complex accounting stuff with your qualified accountant or bookkeeper. And it will show you exactly where your cash stands at any given moment. You'll know your profitability, your reserve for taxes, what you're getting paid, and the amount you have to run your business operations. All that and more. And by the way, the word qualified, I wanted to emphasize that. When you're looking for a qualified accountant or bookkeeper, if you want my help or support in this, just go to ProfitFirstProfessionals.com. And there's a button up there that says Find a Profit First Professional. We have, as you know now, a well over 100 qualified folks and growing constantly. We'll find you someone that is an expert in your field. And we think that's pretty important. Someone that knows your business, knows your industry, knows accounting, and of course knows Profit First. So if you're looking for someone new or just looking in general to maybe replace someone that you currently have, we'll gladly do the dirty work for you. Just go to ProfitFirstProfessionals.com and we'll do that for you. Happily ever after. The ending of Frankenstein, spoiler alert, is one of the most heartwarming happy endings in literature. Dr. Frankenstein and the monster talk it out and reconcile their differences, become best friends, and go into business together to create a hugely successful and beloved ice cream brand, Frank and Stein's. Leaves me in joyful tears every time. All right, just kidding. If you've read the book, you know that the monster destroys everything in Dr. Frankenstein's life. His wife, his family, his hopes for the future. So he sets out to exact revenge and kill his creature. The hunt for the monster takes a toll on Dr. Frankenstein, and he dies a wrecked man, the monster close behind him. Frankenstein is a scary parallel to the extremes of entrepreneurship. Monster businesses have killed marriages, torn apart families, and for some entrepreneurs, decimated any hope for the good life. That miracle of a business we created can end up causing untold suffering. When that happens, the hatred Dr. Frankenstein had for his monster is all too often the chief emotion entrepreneurs have toward their businesses. But your story doesn't have to end that way. You can have your happily ever after. The good news is that while your business may seem to be a monster controlling your life, it is also powerful. Whether your annual revenue is $50,000, $500,000, $5 million, or even $50 million, your business can find a profit-generating workhorse. Never forget the power of your monster. You just have to understand how to direct and control it. When you learn the simple system, your business will no longer be a monster. It will be an obedient, pasture-loving cash cow. and a damn strong one at that. What I'm about to share with you is going to make your business profitable immediately and determinately. I don't care what size business you have or how long you've been surviving check to check and panic to panic, month after month and year after year. You're about to be profitable forevermore. No more leftovers for you. It's time for you to eat first. Here's the deal. There's only one way to fix your financials, by facing your financials. You can't ignore them. You can't let someone else take care of them. You need to take charge of the numbers. But there is good news. The process is really, really simple. In fact, you will fundamentally understand it and implement it within just a few more chapters. Take action. Send me an email. So before I read this little last section of what I encourage you to do, I really want you to do it. I want you to know that I included this section also in the original copy of Profit First, and it has resulted in an uncountable number of emails. Many people that have shared their stories have become friends or at least colleagues that I've run into at events, and I followed their stories from the day that they drew the line in the sand, took charge of their numbers, and where they stand today. There's been some remarkable turnarounds of businesses, so many that I can't count. One of my favorites I included in this revised and updated version of the book, and I'll share the details on them in a little bit as I read on. But just to give you a little teaser, the company is actually a baseball team. It's a minor league baseball team in Savannah, Georgia. They call themselves the Savannah Bananas. And after discovering Profit First, the baseball team owner, Jesse Cole, and his wife, Emily, had turned around their business and eradicated over $1 million of debt in less than a year. And they now run the most profitable minor league baseball business out there. And I got the privileged call on January 1st, New Year's, which is just actually a few days prior to this recording, from Jesse himself asking me to throw out the first pitch at the game as they open up the season. It's the ultimate honor. So I'm going to be down there throwing out the first pitch. And Jesse likes to goof around just as much as me. So the gag already is the baseball will not be a baseball. It's going to be a roll of toilet paper, and the baseball players won't be expecting it. Jesse likes to goof around. Definitely Google the Savannah Bananas and see how they run their business. It is the most innovative baseball team I've ever seen. They have crazy fun times to the point where Jesse said that the breaks between innings are the entertainment, and the baseball is just something that they do between the show. The entertainment is what's become significant. And by focusing on Profit First, it forced tremendous innovation. And, well, it speaks for itself, one of the most innovative baseball teams out there. Okay, now let me get to the action step. It's time to draw the line in the sand and get some accountability. Email me right now. And I'm not kidding. I am not kidding. I read my emails. Email me right now. My email is mike@mikemikhalowicz.com. Now, since I'm reading this to you, I'll even spell it for you. It's Mike, but you can figure that one out, M-I-K-E, at Mike Mikhalowicz, M-I-K-E, M-I-C-H-A-L-O-W-I-C-Z.com. Listen, you just got to email me there once. You got to spell Mikhalowicz once. I've had to spell that thing for my entire life. So no bitching and moaning here. Email me in the subject line, and it's important you do this because I do get quite a few emails. In the subject line, put, I've drawn the line in the sand. And tell me that you are committed to your profitability in the message. Tell me that you will do what it takes to once and for all become permanently profitable. If you are all in on this, I want to know. Email me. I'm going to keep you accountable. Let's commit. Let's do this. Chapter 2, The Core Principles of Profit First. You would think that my daughter presenting me with her piggy bank as a way out of our financial ruin would have compelled me to change. You'd be wrong. That Valentine's Day was a defining moment, for sure. The problem was I had no idea where or how to begin. In reality, wake-up calls are rarely as depicted in the movies. I didn't hear Eye of the Tiger playing as the soundtrack of my life, spurring me into an inspired training montage. There was no drinking raw eggs, punching my debt into submission, or running up the steps to raise my fists in glory of an entrepreneurial turnaround. Instead, I entered a very dark period of depression and insomnia. The shame I felt was overwhelming. Ashamed of my idiocy, of my lies of omission, of my lack of courage to tell my wife the truth about how bad I made things. I share this with you not to seek your pity, but because I think you may have your own version of the story, and I want you to know you are not alone. And if you haven't gone to the dark place, know that it can be avoided. I emphatically believe that. Profit first is the solution to pending disaster in business. Here is how I dealt with depression. I hit the bottle. Beer bottles, actually, and lots of them. Now, listen, here's the dealio. I'm not really a big drinker. I like to talk a big game. Ironically, as I'm recording this, as I told you in the very beginning, I did have I did party it up for New Year's, but that's the rarity for me. I do like to talk about drinking, but quite frankly, I'm more of an instigator than anything. Not at this point in my life. This time, I really did hit the bottle. I'm really not much. Oh, here, I didn't realize I wrote this. I'm really not much of a drinker at all. I guess I need to defend myself. But I started to rely on it as my escape. That choice just led me to more shame, and I hid it as best as I could. If slumping on the couch, watching infomercials, surrounded by Bud Light cans is hiding it. Imagine me in a white undershirt covered with Cheeto stains. It's not a pretty picture. And I don't even like Cheetos. Why was I watching infomercials when we now have 2,976 channels to choose from? Because when I blew it all, cable TV was the first thing to go. That left me with a rabbit ear antenna. Google it, young Padawans. And five network channels that, at 3 a.m., regressed to pitching the latest vegetable pulverizing box or electrocuting belt, all promising ripped abs. Tired of infomercials, I turned on PBS. A fitness expert was explaining to a studio audience that the quick fixes lauded by late-night diet infomercials didn't work and weren't sustainable. Yeah, surprise, surprise, the Thighmaster doesn't work after all. Sorry, Suzanne Somers. He said that what we really need are simple lifestyle fixes without our even really noticing. And his first fix suggestion? Smaller plates. Now riveted, I watched as the man explained that our natural human behavior is to fill up our plates with food, and because mom said so, clean that plate by eating everything on it. I still don't get mom's logic. There are children starving in Africa, so I need to stuff myself? The clean your plate behavior was instilled in me, and probably in you too. The message is ingrained. Changing that habit for a day is a no-brainer, but changing it permanently? That's hard. This is why so many people who diet gain the weight back, why people rarely follow through on New Year's resolutions past the end of January, and why it is so difficult to be disciplined with your spending. As I continued to watch the program, the expert went on to say that when we use smaller plates, we dish out smaller portions, thus eating fewer calories without changing our ingrained behavior of serving a full plate and eating all of what is served. I sat up straight on the couch, my mind alert with this new revelation. The solution is not to try to change our ingrained habits, which is really hard to pull off and nearly impossible to sustain, but instead to change the structure around us and leverage those habits. It was then that I realized every penny my company made was going onto one huge plate. I was gobbling it all up, using every last scrap to operate my business. Every dollar that came in went into one account, my operating account, and I was eating it all. It hurts to admit this, but I was never good at money management. While my businesses were doing well, it was easy to think I knew how to manage money well. But looking back, I realized that that was never the case. I thought I was frugal in principle, or because I was a savvy entrepreneur. But in truth, I was frugal only when it was forced upon me. When I started my first company, a computer network integrator, today it would be called a managed service provider, I had no money. I was able to sell, service, run my office. I found ways to do all that with practically no money because I didn't have any. As the business grew, I started to spend. The more money came in, the more I spent. And I believed, scratch that, I was convinced that all expenditures were necessary. We need better equipment, a better office. An unfinished basement is no place for a business. And more employees to do the work so I could focus on sales. Every step forward in sales growth required an equal step up in my infrastructure, human resources, grade A office space, all fancy terms for expenses. After losing it all, I discovered that I work with whatever is put in front of me. Give me $100 and I will make it happen. Give me $100,000 and I will make it happen. And while it is easier to make things happen with $100,000 in hand, it is also way easier to make mistakes. Totally waste a few $100 when you have $100,000 at your disposal and you feel nothing. Totally waste a few $100 when you only have a few hundo to your name and you feel that pain fast and hard. Looking back at my companies, I realized that I grew them quickly but still survived check to check, only making the real money when I sold them. As my incoming cash increased, now I'm referring to a chart again that's in the book. You can download this at my website, mikemikhalowicz.com. Go to the resources page. I'll kind of draw it out as best I can through the spoken word so you can kind of visualize it. As my income increased, now there's a dotted line kind of like you would see on a stock market graphic or something where it climbs up. There's a dotted line showing that. My expenses increase at a similar rate. And there's another line that kind of runs in parallel to it. So sales are increasing. Incoming cash is increasing. You see my expenses increasing at the same rate. The only time I would have a profit was when income jumped up and I didn't have time to spend at the same rate. Now in the graphic, you see a spike in income and my spending comes in right behind it, but not so fast that there's actually a brief period that there's profit. Then my spending very quickly catches up to my new level of incoming cash. However, I would quickly ramp up my expenses to serve my new level of sales. Then sales would settle back down or drop while my new level of expenses remained higher, which meant I would start to accumulate losses, making me desperate to sell more and sell faster at any cost, which could in turn further increase my expense. So in the graphic, as the income goes back down, and I know you've experienced this, your income goes up, some great sales, and then you have a quiet period or you don't have any great sales, income goes back down. But our expenses climb up and we experience what's called loss aversion. It's a behavioral response that once we're spending something, once we possess something, new office space, a new car, if there's ever a demand on us to return it, we'll go to extraordinary measures to actually keep it. So once we possess something, we keep it. And once we possess a new level of expenditures, we actually feel compelled to keep it. So income drops and our expenses don't. That's crushing to a business. As the PBS show shifted into early morning kids programming, I muted the television and began to connect the dots, which Count von Kant, the vampire on Sesame Street, was also doing, literally connecting dots on the screen. If I reduce the plate size of my business operating account, I would spend differently. So rather than try to curb my spending habit, I would create the experience of having less cash on hand than I actually had, and then would find ways to still make things work. How did I know this would work? Because it already works for millions of people with every paycheck. Think 401k deductions. As Richard Thaler and Cass Sunstein explain in his fascinating book, Nudge, when people start participating in 401ks, they rarely stop. The key is to get started so both the savings accumulate and the lifestyle adjusts to meet their residual pay. If 401ks were like regular savings accounts, people would find it way too tempting and easy to dip into their savings anytime they felt like it. The reason they don't is because investment accounts charge penalties and make it difficult to withdraw money whenever you want it. In the same way, I could make myself believe and behave as if I had only my small plate money to work with, and not a small plate plus a big crock pot at the table. But what would I do with the other money? Could I use it to, shock of shocks, pay myself a salary? Pay my taxes? Hey, wait a minute. Wait one stinking minute. Could I actually set aside some of it for profit before I paid bills? And that's when it hit me. What if I took my profit first? For a guy who built two businesses on top line, revenue-focused thinking, This idea was a revelation. At 6 a.m., admittedly with beer breath, Cheeto stains covering my undershirt and hair going in more directions than Einstein's, it sounded like crazy talk. Who would have the audacity to take profit first? I would. The four core principles of profit first. Let's take a moment to talk dietary science. No groans, please. The stuff is fascinating. In 2012, a report by Koert von Ittersum and Brian Wansink in the Journal of Consumer Research concluded that the average plate size in America had grown 23% between the years 1900 and 2012, from 9.6 inches to 11.8 inches. Running the math, the article explains that should this increase in plate size encourage an individual to consume just 50 more calories per day, that person would put on an extra 5 pounds of weight each year. Year after year, that adds up to a very chunky monkey. But using smaller plates is just one factor. A Twinkie on a small plate is still a Twinkie. There is more to a healthy diet, and it is based on four core principles of weight loss and nutrition. First, use small plates. Using smaller plates starts a chain reaction. When you use a small plate, you get smaller portions, which means you take in fewer calories. When you take in fewer calories than you normally would, you start to lose weight. Second, serve sequentially. If you eat the vegetables rich in nutrients and vitamins first, they will start satisfying your hunger. When you move on to the next course, your mac and cheese or mashed potatoes, they don't count as vegetables, you will automatically eat less. By changing the sequence of your meals by eating your vegetables first, you automatically bring a nutritional balance to your diet. Third, remove temptation. Remove any temptation from where you eat. People are driven by convenience. If you're anything like me, when there's a bag of Doritos sitting in the kitchen, it calls out to you constantly, even when you aren't hungry. If you don't have any junk food in the house, you're probably not going to run out to the store to get it. That would mean putting on pants. That's fine. Sometimes I laugh at my own jokes, so if you didn't think it was funny, at least I did. You're going to eat the healthy food you've stocked instead. Fourth, enforce a rhythm. If you wait until you are